Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Great to have you here at The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production. And this is our final show, actually, that'll be played the year 2009. Kind of amazing when you think about that. It's been an interesting year.
Decade.
A lot of different things. A lot of different things have been going on. I find this... by the way, let me tell you first. We've got Donald Dell with us today. Donald has written a book called Never Make the First Offer. Donald has credentials like you wouldn't believe. And here it is right here. I'll tell you about him in just a minute, but Never Make the First Offer. This guy is like a tennis great and
sports agent,
and a sports representative and such. Really cool stuff, especially in light of Tiger's debacle at this point in time.
Yeah.
It's good to have him on. A little bit later, we'll have Jeffrey Gittimer with us. We also have Gene Bliss. Beloved companies, spirited souls. That's what they employ. Are you a spirited soul? That does not mean with alcohol, though. But if you are talking spirits, I think this is an interesting campaign. It's called Unmask the Truth. Did you know there was a Champagne Bureau?
No.
In France?
Did.
It's the U.S. Champagne Bureau. Has introduced a campaign dubbed Unmask the Truth to raise awareness of American sparkling wine producers who incorrectly label their products as
champagne.
Yeah. Champagne.
Can't do that.
The main ad centers, I can't believe that they would even take the time to do this, though. The main ad centers on a sparkling wine bottle that reads American Champagne. It is partly covered by a mask. Underneath the text is Champagne only comes from Champagne, France. We're trying to make it very clear that those who are misusing the name are masquerading as something else. At this particular point in time, when you go to one of those $49.95 weekend events for New Year's Eve,
and they have sparkling wine in the room,
who cares?
Not champagne.
Who cares?
Yeah.
It's sparkly, and you have it once a year. And,
right.
And I can understand that they want to get that back. But to put together, number one, a campaign.
Now, you say that. I say French. That's got to be a French organization that's doing that. Is that right?
Well, it says the U.S. Champagne Bureau.
That's weird, isn't it? Why would the U.S. care what the, it's usually the French are up in arms about that every year. We hear about that. But that's interesting.
Oh, and American Airlines is doing a thing, including a flyer in first class and business class on the trays. Of course, they're not doing it
to remind
coach,
people.
Because the people in coach don't give a rats. You know what about whatever the heck they're drinking.
They're not getting it anyway.
So,
but you're waking up with a headache anyway. You're right, Ray. And so what difference does it make whether it's French or American?
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And frankly, I'd rather have a good, a Chardonnay or something like that anyway.
Right.
So that's fine. Or in your case, particularly the new Forsythe, the sparkling waters. go ahead, Brad.
I was going to mention, we talked about this several months ago, and now come to find out ESPN, the magazine's body issue, which features athletes in various stages of dress, turns out to be the best issue in terms of advertising for the month of October since the magazine debuted in 1998. The special issue will return for at least another year. I would suspect it would at
sure,
that rate.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, the body issue. That's ESPN's version, I guess, of the swimsuit issue, but it's male and female, I guess.
Whatever.
Yeah.
That's fine.
At least we're not talking about Levi's Johnston.
Levi Johnston.
I mean, Levi's Johnson.
Yeah.
I mean, Levi Johnson.
The Palin guy, folks.
Yeah, the guy he was in Playboy. Girl.
Playgirl.
Playgirl.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a Playboy.
No.
Unless it was something else. Anyway, right. we've got on that note, folks.
Yeah.
Something from Jean Bliss. She's got a brand new book out, I Love You More Than My Dog. Check it out as well. The customer experience, beloved companies and spirited souls. That's who they employ. Let's find out what that's all about right now.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Beloved companies may have quirky natures, but they have a spirited soul. They may stumble and fall from time to time, but aren't timid about bearing their foibles to customers. The genuine and authentically true companies are more important to customers than those that make false promises or the loud, trumped-up ones that don't deliver. Marketing ploys and offers won't make your customers loyal or earn their trust, but being real and authentic will. Leaders blend who they are as people with how they lead. Business decisions combine purpose and passion, and employees are given permission to be real. These attitudes and actions embody what is behind beloved companies. They take what informs their personal decisions with them into business. They let their roots influence decision-making. People call upon their personal experiences to inform their behavior, and they blend it with their business acumen to accomplish extraordinary outcomes. Do you translate what you value into decisions? Are people nurtured to bring the best version of themselves to your company?
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
That's Gene Bliss with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth here at the Advertising Show. Let me tell you something about our author of the book today. Never make the first offer. Wisdom from a master deal maker, Donald Dell, founder of ProServe, but he's also the co-founder of the Association of Tennis Professionals and the founder of ProServe, a leading sports agency that has represented hundreds of star athletes. Yeah, the big ones. He's also a former captain of the U.S. Davis Cup tennis team, the founder of the Legg Mason Tennis Classic, and a television tennis commentator. He was elected to the International Tennis Hall of Fame in 2009. All in all, with the new book and that election, it was a good year for Donald Dell, who co-authored this book along with John Boswell. So we'll talk with the Donald. No, he doesn't want to be called the Donald. There's only one, the Donald. So Donald Dell will be our guest today.
And by the way, Ray, Lowry Mays, CEO of Clear Channel Communications, founder, is mentioned in the book. It's a very, very
really?
Interesting book. Phil Knight, CEO of Nike, and several other prominent individuals that you would know by name, we'd all know by name. This guy's moving and shaking with all of them, and I'm really looking forward to today's interview.
Yeah, it'll be good. As they all are.
Yeah.
Well, for the most part, they're.
Sure.
I mean, we do get some zingers.
We can't help it.
From time to time. And we're sorry about that. So, Tiger Woods. You haven't heard enough of that already, have you? As we produce this show, he's still very much in the news. And this goes back to Gillette. And why this is from Advertising Age. Basically, why Tiger is still the best Gillette can get. They're saying Tiger Woods' transgressions have left the formerly clean-shaven Gillette with a trio of bad boys as a centerpiece of their global marketing, and that might actually be a good thing for P&G. Gillette endorsed a trio, has some close shaves. Mr. Woods' embarrassing and widely reported marital fidelity woes will be the punchline for a while. Saturday Night Live did a great thing on that. And it hasn't been a particularly good quarter for Mr. Woods' fellow Gillette champion, either as the soccer star Thierry Henry achieved global villain status by using an illegal handball to set up a crucial goal in a World Cup qualifying match last month, and tennis star Roger Federer dented his formerly immaculate reputation with a petulant bout of whining while losing in the U.S. Open Finals in September. I remember that. So, you know, I wouldn't say that those add up to Woods' stuff, but it should be interesting. And they're saying we're sticking with Woods, and it's okay, and Gillette will sell blades.
And Nike's sticking with him.
So even though it's been a tough year for Tiger, it's still an okay year when you can rake in that kind of bucks.
Sure.
Let's hope he gets his life back in order shortly as well. So Donald Dell in just a few minutes here at the Advertising Show, being powered by Shipple. Shipple.com is the website. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L. A program, a platform called Tendency is what powers it, and it's incredible. Check it out at Shipple.com. Back in just a minute with more at the Advertising Show.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe.
You love Devilman Gum. Double good,
on the Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe, as promised, the author of a book called Never Make the First Offer, Except When You Should, Wisdom from a Master Dealmaker. And that gentleman is Donald Dell, founder of ProServe. And we told you a little bit about Donald, but we're going to learn a lot more during these three segments with him here with Ray and Brad on the Advertising Show. Donald, a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It'd be fun.
Yeah, well, you don't know that yet, Donald, but we certainly hope it will be fun.
It'll be fun for us.
Totally, very much honored that you had taken time out of your day to join us, and very, very interesting read. We receive a lot of books here at the Advertising Show, and we don't have authors on unless we find their book a cut above, and yours is certainly all that and more. Really love the way that you have real-world examples and mention celebrities and well-known sports figures in your book as examples and takeaways for learning opportunities. But before we do that, Donald, your take on Andre Agassi's new book.
Well, I think Andre tried very much to write an honest, as he put it, open book. My only regret is that, you know, he didn't write the book. I mean, he had a person who wrote the book that he acknowledges and thanks at the end of the book, the last two pages of his book, and he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, not Andre, but the person who wrote the book. And I thought he should have put his name, you know, on the cover of the book because it's a little misleading, and you don't get to that until the end of the book. And he claims that the author's Knopf wouldn't let him do that or didn't want it, the ghost writer on the cover. I just think that's misleading. The book itself, I think Andre tried to tell everything in his life as he grew up and went through tennis. And I think part of it was he was being pushed a lot to sell books, which I think is a mistake. But it seemed to have been very, very well received, although the business about crystal meth, the drug and stuff that he was taking when he was very discouraged, you know, that was 17 years ago, and yet that got the biggest controversy and coverage, which is, I guess, the sign of the times. And I don't think he's very happy about that and didn't expect that, but I think his publisher did. I think they thought it would sell copies. And maybe they did, but, you know, that disappointed me, frankly.
That he made the drug reference?
Well, no, that it, just the way the thing unfolded. I mean, here's a guy who had a great career, and he's done a lot of things good, and he opens by saying, I hate tennis, and my father made me play, and I hated, you know, when he made me play, and it's sort of, the first part is very negative as he goes through his life, worried about losing his hair, and he played with a hair piece.
Yeah.
I don't know, all of that seemed awfully sensational-oriented, but maybe I'm mistaken. That seems to be the sign of the times.
Yeah, did you know Andre personally?
I know him very well, and he sent me a copy of his book, autographed, in the mail.
Yeah.
And he's a very, very good guy, a very decent guy, and the last 10 years of his life have been phenomenal. What he's done for this academy out in Las Vegas.
I mean, right.
He literally has raised probably about $75 million for the school.
Wow.
I've been to the school, and I've seen the kids in uniforms, and it is a tremendous occasion and achievement what he's done.
Well, let's get into your book, and I knew you'd have something to say about Andre's book, and let's jump into your book, Donald. Although the book is about negotiations and developing successful business relationships, what audience did you have in mind when you wrote your book?
Well, I thought it was sort of twofold. One is probably someone between 18 and 35, one trying to get a job in different industries, primarily the sports industry or the television industry. And the other would be an audience of people who are already established and are just starting out in a career they selected and trying to be helpful in what they might be thinking about in approaching negotiating deals or, you know, getting a job and working with others and relationships. So I think there were two different audiences.
So what parallels do you make from do you take from tennis and sports in general to business? Of course, you were on the business side of sports, and you were also on the sports side of sports. So the parallels, how do you see those?
Well, a couple of things. I think, you know, I really tried to give real life stories and truthful anecdotes to leave, you know, different points and messages and both negotiations and in relationships. But also, I think, you know, I played Wimbledon 7 or 8 times. I played the U.S. Open in America here about 15 times. And I think tennis is a unique sport because it's an individual sport, like golf. You know, you're out there on your own. Nobody can help you. You can't call time out if you're playing badly. You can't substitute another player in or exchange different. You know, you're out there by yourself. And so as a young kid learning to play, I think, you know, you learn the values of really competing and discipline and training and working hard if you're dedicated in trying to be the best player, you know, of your age group. And when I was 15, I was a national champion in America, 15 and under. So I really worked, you know, 5-6 hours a day at tennis, 2 in the morning and 2 after school, every single day that I could. But it taught me an awful lot, I think, about self-reliance and confidence and being on your own, because it, the individual sport of tennis or golf is so different from team sports, because there's nobody to help you if you're playing loud.
Mm-hmm. You know, would it be fair to say you were one of the pioneers in the sport agent business?
Well, I think I certainly was, possibly in the sports industry and the sports representation. I started representing tennis players in 1970, Arthur Ashe and Stan Smith. They were my first two clients. At that stage, the game of tennis had just gone open, open tennis, meaning pros and amateurs, to compete against each other in 1969. So in 70 January, I resigned from the Davis Cup team as captain and started managing players. And I was the first person in tennis anywhere in the world that, you know, represented or managed or was the lawyer for a tennis player.
Yeah,
in that case, I did start very much at the beginning.
I think your background, your legal background, was the perfect setup for that. And we're going to talk about the what I found very interesting was the 10 rules that you lay out in your book about power networking, which is also important. And we're going to do that in just a second, Doug.
Subtitle called "Show Me the Money," right? Something like that. Never make the first offer. Donald Dell, founder of ProServe, author of the book you just heard about, and it's Ray Brad here on the Advertising Show.
Why do more media professionals read iWantMedia.com? iWantMedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iWantMedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iWantMedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iWantMedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
I drink Dr. Pepper and I'm proud. I used to be alone in a crowd. But now you look around these days.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Shelton, Brad Forsyth, and a special guest out of Washington, D.C. Donald Dell, who is the author of Never Make the First Offer, except when you should, it says. Wisdom from a Master Dealmaker here with Ray and Brad. And, you know, as we produce this program, you can't go a headline or two or anywhere you go without hearing about Tiger Woods and the debacle that he's gotten himself into. As a representative and a specialist in the sports industry, and I think he's represented by somebody out of Cleveland, I'm not sure. There you go, that's a problem. anyway, Donald, okay, you got Tiger Woods there. What do you do for somebody like that?
Well, you mean in the situation he finds himself in now?
Absolutely.
Well, I think one of the problems, you know, you can always be a Monday morning quarterback. It's kind of easy after the fact, but I think they made a really strategic mistake right at the beginning.
Yeah.
By not coming out, you know, the day of the car accident, talk about what caused the car accident, and not have, what happened was he didn't speak to anybody for 3 or 4 days except on his website, and then it became a battle of innuendos, and all the different, you know, blogs and Facebook and all of that went ahead and just, you know, guessed at what was going on or what they thought, or was his wife mad at him, or was he cheating on his wife, and all this was innuendo. Nobody knew any of the facts. And suddenly, people started popping up here and there. Some one woman says, I'm hiring Gloria Allred, and then she flies to L.A. to meet her lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't even identified what the problem was when he hit a tree. I just think that they let events really take control rather than them coming out and trying to say, they should have come right out an hour after it occurred or whenever he was well the next morning and said, here's what happened. We had an argument, and I ran out, jumped in the car and rushed out and smashed into a tree. I mean, I'm sure other people have done that, but suddenly it became, you know, because Tiger Woods is the number one athlete, most recognizable person in the whole world. And so, you know, they really lost totally control of the event.
So is this damage beyond control then, beyond repair?
Well, I think, no, the American public's funny. As long as Tiger can keep winning, next time he wins Augusta, or the next time he wins the U.S. Open, no one's going to be worried about it.
Forget about it. Yeah, that's it.
They won't people won't forget about the character of the person so much, but they will forget about, you know, all the different press and things that have been written about him. I think it's hurt his reputation and his character in a lot of ways that are very damning and very damaging, which is a shame because he's a phenomenal athlete, but obviously he's been living a double life.
Yeah, and when Chris Brown can release new music and be in the top five videos for MTV after what he did, I mean, look at the world we live in. Let's jump back into your book. Out of the 10 rules that you lay out in your book called the Power Networking, some obvious ones, making friends of their friends, find mentors. You want some of this advice, folks, go buy the book. But two in particular I'd like to hear you talk about, Donald, is give advice as well as more intriguing, don't keep score.
Well, I think, you know, give advice as you're trying. I get a lot of phone calls from people, parents mostly, saying, my son doesn't know or my daughter doesn't know what they want to do. They're graduating from college or they're graduating from law school. They love sports. They're thinking about sports. Would you at least talk to them on the phone, or if I know the family well, would you meet with them? And just give them some advice. And that's easy to do. It's time-consuming, but on the other hand, I have a simple thought about that. If you're nice to somebody's child, you own the parents. You know, the parents really appreciate you taking the time to help their children. And as I say throughout the book, life is all about relationships. That's the number one thing in the world. I teach a course at the University of Virginia Law School, and the first class, 10 minutes in, every year now, I start 10 minutes into the class, and I say to the students, look, if you don't read a case, if you don't come to class, if you never see me again, if you don't learn anything from this class, remember two words. And the two words are relationships and trust. If you can develop relationships with people and hopefully build trust on your relationships and in your relationships, you're going to be a success. And I truly believe that. I think people skills and getting along with others is really what life is all about in every level, whether it's business, whether it's athletics, whether it's religion, whatever it is. I really believe it's relationships and working with people, other people that you come in contact with.
I think that's well said. And by the way, just to show you we listened to your advice, I wanted to ask about Alexandria as well as Christina. How are your two daughters doing now?
My two daughters are doing great. One of them just got married October the 3rd. She's very happy. They're getting a new apartment, she and her husband in New York. And the other young girl, Alexandra, works in a film company and does production and films and is working a lot with us now in New York as an independent contractor bringing us films and projects.
And you're based in New York, by the way, now, Donald?
Well, my headquarters is in Washington, but we have offices in New York and Los Angeles and other places. So I'm in New York quite a lot. I'm here today, for example, in New York.
Not a bad place to be. On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, our guest is Donald Dell, founder of ProServe and also co-author of the book called Never Make the First Offer. We need to give your co-author, John Boswell, some accolades as well. Wisdom from a master deal maker. We've got another segment to do with Donald, and we'll do that here in just a moment. If you stick around, we'd appreciate that.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com.
How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Here are some most happy fellas, the four lads for Ford.
Standing on the corner. Back with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show, and out of Washington, D.C. this weekend, it's Donald Dell, co-author of the book Never Make the First Offer. I want to get a website as well. DonaldDell, DELL.com is the website. Donald, it's a pleasure to have you here at The Advertising Show.
Thanks for me. I'm enjoying it.
You note in your book, Donald, you can't force a friendship just as you can't force a deal. You give anecdotal evidence of this through a very interesting story about Nike CEO Phil Knight. Share that with our audience, if you would, please, Donald.
Well, I just think, you know, when you're trying to make a deal with somebody, Phil Knight and I had a relationship that we met. I knew him before, but we went to a tennis match in Rome. It rained, and we were with our wives, and so we went over and had lunch. While it was raining, well, it rained about 5 hours that particular day, and we all had lunch and stayed on and had drinks, and we finished about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But throughout the long day there, we got to know each other pretty well. A month or two later, I was negotiating with Phil for the Michael Jordan shoe, Air Jordan, and he was having problems and arguing with several people in my office, and so I called him up and said, Phil, let's make a deal that we'll go to Chicago, we'll get a suite, and we'll get two bedrooms. You be in one, I'll be in another. And we agree that we won't leave Chicago until we work out a deal, no matter what happens. And we had some disagreements at first, and we did stay about three quarters of a day, part of a night, and nobody left, and we finally made the deal. And it was a very successful one for both Nike and Michael Jordan. In fact, after that initial contract, a few years later, the Nike Air Jordan was so successful that Nike got very creative, and they started a new division called Jordan Inc., which was named after Michael Jordan. That company today is selling about $800 million worth of product.
Hello.
And Michael Jordan's quite happy with it, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And so is your accountant, based on the, you know, points you're getting on that deal, huh, Donald?
The royalty that Jordan gets is quite staggering.
Yeah. Donald bought a new boat that year.
I want to get your take on what you call negotiating backwards. It sounds counterintuitive, but yet you've got a great thought on that, Donald.
Well, I think, you know, if you want to decide, you decide ahead of time where you'd like to end up in a particular deal. And then you work back from that. In other words, you don't just go forward and say, well, I need this, and I need this, and I need this. You come at it a different way. And one of the ways you do that is you ask the other person, what do they need to make the deal? You know, deal making is really an art of listening. Mm-hmm. Most people don't understand that. Selling is an art of listening. Why? Because you learn so much by listening. That's why I gave the title of the book, Never Make the First Offer. Not because I was trying to be cute or clever, but because if the other person comes forward and sort of commits or states what he's looking for in the deal or what he wants out of the deal, you learn a ton right at the beginning. And I think that's very helpful.
Let's say you know what the other party's wanting, and they come back with their offer because they were up front and suggesting in a general sense what they were wanting from you, and then they come back with the offer and it's less than what you wanted. Would it be fair to say that it would be appropriate to say, let me explain to you what I need in order to make this deal? I mean, do you jump right into the end, as you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I even in the book call it the moment of truth. When I say to the other side, well, wait a minute, my client's not going to accept that. But here's what I've listened to you. I know what you need out of the deal. I've now got your offer. Here's what we need out of the deal. And then you state what you need to make a deal. Let's make it simple. Let's suppose my client is a team sport player, basketball player, and he wants in the NBA, and he wants a 4-year deal. And they're at 2 years. And I say to them, look, I can't, and he's a high draft pick, so I have some leverage. I say to him, look, I can't make a 2-year deal. I need to make a 4-year deal. And here's why. Now, at that moment of truth, when you commit yourself to that response, either the person you're negotiating with believes you or does not. And that's what I call the moment of truth. If he believes you, or when he does that to you and he says, no, my owner won't pay more than X, that's the maximum he's going to pay. If you believe him, again, that's a different, that's the other side of the moment of truth. But if you do have that relationship with the guy and you believe him or he believes you, you're going to make the deal. And that's why, you know, reputation and integrity and all of those things that go in. The sports industry is a very small industry. And you deal with these same people many times, not just once or twice in your life, particularly when you've been around a long time, as I have. And so you know these same people, they know you, and you have a track record. And so when you take the position that this is really where I have to come out if you want to make this particular deal, they've either got to believe you or not. And as I said early on in the book, you have to be able to walk away from the deal, too. That's the hardest thing of all negotiations.
Hardest
when
thing?
When you can't reach that moment, and you say, I'm sorry, I can't do the deal. No. Thanks very much. And you walk away.
Hardest thing I've been able to convince my wife of as well, and it's cost me a fortune. As we wrap up today's interview, I have one final question. You stressed the importance of mentors early on in your book and actually throughout your book. However, as one of the first sports agents, you probably didn't have many role models. I'm curious, Donald, who were your mentors?
Well, I had two that I really admired. Sergeant Shriver, I worked for him in 67 and 68. Sergeant Shriver was running Peace Corps for Lyndon Johnson. Then he was running OEO, the Office of Economic Opportunity. I traveled with him as his assistant for about 18 months. He had maybe the greatest people skills and ability to deal with all kinds of problems in Congress and budgets and so forth of anybody I ever met. In the tennis and sports world, my mentor was Jack Kramer, the great tennis player and promoter from Southern California, who incidentally just died September 26th of this year. Jack died at 88, was a lifelong friend, and taught me an awful lot about different people and different situations, and not just tennis, but about life.
As we wrap up the interview, Donald, we want to thank you for, first of all, writing a great book. If you want to make 2010 a little bit different and a little bit more successful for you, go get the book. Never Make the First Offer, Wisdom from a Master Dealmaker, and it is Donald Dell. And, Donald, thanks for being with us today on The Advertising Show.
Well, Brad and Ray, thank you. I really enjoyed the discussion.
We have more to come your way here in just a moment, so stay right here.
There is somewhere better to get inspired creative ideas. This is where it's at. OpenAd.net, the first online platform for advertisers, changing the way that ideas are created and traded. Access nearly 11,000 creative minds representing 125 countries around the world. Waiting online to have a go at your brief. Imagine the impact such range and diversity of talent can have on your next advertising campaign. All creative work is IP cleared before you get it. We take care of all the details while you get brilliant ideas in a fraction of the time, at a lower cost, and with a lot less fuss. No endless meetings, no away days. When a client needed a new corporate identity ASAP and on a tight budget, they got the impossible. 170 creative solutions to the client in just 24 hours, from brief to deadline. OpenAd.net, busting down the walls of the ad industry. Put it to the test. Just go to OpenAd.net and give us a try. And what have you got to lose? The future starts here.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
Hey, how about a nice Hawaiian punch?
Sure.
You taste 7 kinds of fruit in Hawaiian punch. 7 kinds of fruit in Hawaiian punch. Hawaiian punch is made with 7.
Our thanks again to Donald Dell out of Washington, D.C., author of Never Make the First Offer. DonaldDell.com, again, is his website. And do go get the book. It's a good one. It'll be the difference of an okay 2010 or an incredible 2010. And we now have a distinction of which way we say that word, or that year, I should say.
2010.
But we didn't say...
2010.
We've been saying 2009,
2000,
you know.
Or 2010.
2010. I couldn't get back. No, yeah, my father was born in 1905.
Right.
I wasn't.
What was
there.
That, of course?
That was a long
wasn't
time
really
ago.
Was he really born in that year?
Oh, yeah.
My goodness, you're old.
Yes, I know that.
Or he was an old man when he decided to conceive you, at least his part.
Well, actually, he was, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. I was told I was a tumor.
Your wife has still referred to you that as an occasion.
On occasion, all of our wives refer to us as a tumor.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, Jeffrey Gittimer. What? Next week, we've got Sam Goldman coming up, where East meets West. An interesting book.
Eats. Yeah. Sorry, I thought you said meats.
Where eats. East eats West.
Yes.
It's a cooking show, folks.
Correct.
So there we go. We'll have that next week. Jeffrey Gittimer, we're glad to have Jeffrey back with us here at the Advertising Show. When you're going into a deal, I'm sure Donald will have something to say about this as well, but identify the risk. You know, is this a good deal or a bad deal? Well, Jeffrey's going to tell us a little bit more about it.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations with Jeffrey Gittimer, nationally syndicated columnist in the network of City Business Journals and other great publications worldwide. If you're offended by common sense commentary, don't you dare listen. Now, here's Jeffrey.
A risk of purchase is some mental or physical barrier, real or imagined, that causes a person to hesitate or rethink ownership of what it is that you're trying to sell them. As a salesperson, your job is to identify the risk and eliminate it. Interestingly, risk is harder to identify than it is to eliminate. What is risk to some people is a walk in the park to others. What may seem ordinary or of no consequence to the salesperson is huge to the prospect. What may be just a few thousand dollars to some people may be, oh my gosh, $3,000 to other people. Now, risk is actually a lack of confidence, a lack of trust, and a lack of believability either in the product or the service or the company or the salesperson. Or maybe the customer doesn't believe in themselves enough. The absence of these elements causes doubt and rethinking the purpose of the purchase. Now, you may think that it's an objection or a barrier. I'm looking at it as a risk. The aspect of risk is a subtle one. Only the best of salespeople will get this concept and harness it.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations from The Advertising Show, the only radio show in America featuring Jeffrey Gittimer as a regular weekly guest. To learn more about his books, tapes, CDs, and speaking engagements, log on to Gittimer.com, Gittomer.com. And tune in next week when we'll hear Jeffrey say...
This is Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you that if no one responds to your ad, it may be because your ad sucks.
Jeffrey Gittimer, always good stuff here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
Yeah, I've got two items that are tied in together, Ray. TiVo CEO predicts, CEO Tom Rogers predicts that there is a train wreck coming for the broadcast and cable industry on the advertising front. The reason, he says, paying attention to 30-second ads that interrupt shows, which is not the way people, according to Tom Rogers, elect to watch television these days. Of course, president of CEO of TiVo is going to say something like that. But what's interesting, Ray, is Nielsen's latest three-screen report reveals that 99% of U.S. video content is viewed on traditional television, and that's, you know, pretty much a given. Yet DVR usage is up by 21% since Q3 '08, while online video usage is up by nearly 35%. So the days are getting less and less when people watch television in a traditional sense of the term. I know that's true for you and me both.
Oh, yeah.
And although I'm not prepared to say that the train wreck is coming, as Mr. Rogers predicts, but it's a different day we live in these days.
I wouldn't call it a train wreck, but I would call it a change in attitude.
Should be a concern, yeah.
Yeah, so think about it, right? Sam Goldman next week here with Ray and Brad and the Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit them online at edage.com. Hope you enjoyed today's show. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.